I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for all my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve!
Yo, yo.
Take a scalpel.
Yo, ho, ho, yo.
A tubular vertebrae.
Yo, yo.
I need some suction.
Yo, ho, ho, yo.
In the garrison.
Yo,
welcome back, everyone. It's the Weird Medicine Addendum. It's an hour-long pre-recorded show where we answer medical questions emailed to us by our listeners. I'm Dr. Steve with my pal, P.A. John.
Good evening.
Hello, John. And our show is P.A. John and Dr. Steve, so we call it Podcast.
Actually, no. With P.A. John and Dr. Steve, we could call it Podcast.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, Podcast.
I like that.
I like the music better too. Now we've just made Kevin Smith mad, and we're just kidding. It's just a joke. It's a joke. Anyway.
Actually, I would call it flattery.
There you go. That's right. Absolutely. What an inauspicious beginning. Anyway, hey, we were going to have North Philly Pete, which is also the AKA Ed from East Tennessee, with us tonight, but he's feeling under the weather, and we'll talk about him in a little bit. So on third mic tonight, we have our friend, Dr. Karthik.
Hey there, Steve.
Hey, man. And Karthik, that's K. Wow. What kind of name is that? It's a Tamil name. I remember Karthik's family is from India, but he's as American as apple pie. He grew up in Southwest Virginia. And I remember one of the first times we met, I remember you said, I sure am glad that my mom gave us normal Indian names.
And, yeah, that's like John Smith in India. It's a pretty common Indian name. And
Karthik.
Yeah.
Okay. Good man. Well, we call him Special K. That's his poker name, so we'll call you Special K for the duration of the show.
Thank you that for having me, and you and John. Hopefully I can help you out tonight with some diagnosis.
Here. All right. Well, Dr. K is he's a hospitalist and a specialist in internal medicine, and he knows a thing or two, so he's going to join us tonight, and we'll see how it goes. P.A. John and his lovely wife, P.A. Jill, who used to be on the show with us, are expecting their first baby. Congratulations.
That's right. I figured if Eastside Dave could do it, hell, anybody could try it.
Okay, well, good. Congratulations. And we have a show coming up in February, and you might not be able to make it.
No.
And if you do make it, you'll probably be in big trouble. So because that's when baby P.A. whatever, baby P.A. John / Jill is expected to arrive.
So that's right.
Congratulations.
That's exactly right. Yep. Yeah. February 10th.
So we're working. That's right around when we're having our next live show. So we thought we'd bring Special K in, see if he works out. Maybe he could fill in for you. Just that one time. Don't get paranoid. I'm sure he won't be replacing you or anything. So.
Right.
Before we get started, just remember, we're not your healthcare providers. Check out anything you hear from us with your regular doctor, nurse, practitioner, osteopathic, acupuncturist, or whatever. If you have a medical question, email us at drsteve202@gmail.com, or better yet, post it to ronfez.net. We found a new home there in the Weird Medicine Forum, and it's really been a really positive thing for us. We've gotten huge response. And you can still visit drsteve.com, but we'll mostly be using that for posting podcasts and medical news. Now, Weird Medicine, the live show, as update for everyone, is up in the air right now. It cost John and I thousands of dollars to travel to New York City for a weekend to do the show. And a lot of people aren't aware that, I mean, we do that for free. I mean, XM isn't picking up any of our expenses.
Nope.
And the Saturday night preemption schedule gives us only 10 days notice. That's the most they can guarantee us. But, we're not super – I mean, we're not rich. I mean, it ain't like it used to be for the medical profession. And I can't be buying those refundable tickets that cost a couple grand to – you know, we got to buy our tickets 21 days in advance and fly in coach. And when you got to buy it 21 days in advance and they only give you 10 days notice whether you're actually going to be doing a show or not, it ain't happening. So the October show, unless we can do it from the Nashville studios, is off the table for right now. But thanks. I'm going to say four words that have probably not been uttered in XM 202 history. Thank God for E-Rock. Because Eric has given us this forum to do our show monthly on the 8 to 9 hour, so we really appreciate it. You know, the phone banks go crazy during our show when we do the live show, and we get it. I mean, the fun of Weird Medicine is in the phone calls.
Right.
And we'll be back doing that stuff just as soon as we can. So no New York City, no Nobu, no John getting drunk on sake, no North Philly Pete, which is, I guess, what we're calling him this show, putting the moves on Fez. And speaking of which, we were going to have North Philly Pete on this time. And the reason he's a little coy with his name, he doesn't want his real name getting out there, you know, being a prominent washboard salesman in
Dollywood.
Outside Dollywood. So he's going by North Philly Pete this month. And he was going to be here tonight, but was unable to make it because of illness. And so we decided to do a phoner with him. And here's the Fez's Gay Blind Date update. All right, we have on the phone with us North Philly Pete.
What's up, Pete?
Hello, Pete.
Whoa, guys, not much. How are you?
Hey, we heard that you were feeling a little under the weather. You were supposed to be with us on the show tonight. And we heard you were sick. You couldn't be here, so we figured we'd do a phoner instead.
Yeah, man. It's been a rough couple of days. Just been under the weather a little bit.
Hey, so we've got some audio to play for you. This occurred on the Ron and Fez show after our last Weird Medicine, and I just wanted to get your comments on it.
So what do you need to be wooed a little more than what he's doing?
Well, I don't know if I'm interested, but that certainly wasn't wooing on the Saturday Night Virus. Well,
now, Ed, Pete, is it Ed or Pete? Pete?
I think it was Pete.
So was that wooing that we heard on the Saturday Night Virus a few weeks back? Was that what you were trying to do?
Was that considered a wooing?
Right. Because Fez said that it didn't sound like wooing to him.
Well, it wasn't wooing. Okay. I mean, you know, if I was going to woo Fez, it would have been a little more than sitting beside him and talking a little bit about football. Now, I did ask him to join me for a University of Tennessee football game.
Okay, listen to the rest of the audio. Here you go.
What would you like him to say to you?
Well, it was like, you know, it was basically like he ended up sitting next to me by mistake. Like, you know, like there wasn't any, you know, because I
now
was told
we got
this
it from Dr. Steve that he wants to go out with you.
Right.
Does
yeah.
the guy not want to go out with you?
I don't think so. I don't think he does. I think this is a cruel joke on Dr. Steve's part.
A cruel joke on Dr. Steve's part.
Well, I'm not sure if that's cruel to me or cruel to Fez.
Oh! No, you did not.
It's still out. It's still out.
All right, so let's settle this once and for all. Do you want to go out with Fez or do you not?
You know, I'm not sure if I want to go out with Fez. Fez, just from listening to him on the show, maybe when we had dinner, it might have been something that could have happened, but he sounds a little needy at times on the show, so I was like, it's probably going to be a pass.
Oh, we're never going to be on that show again. Well, everybody, there's your Fez's Gay Blind Date update. Okay, so there you go. What do you think?
I would...
I don't think Fez is needy.
No, I don't think so either.
We're going to have to agree to disagree with North Philly Pete on that one.
Yeah, I would think so.
You know, one thing that Fezzy has said on the air is that he just wants to want something. And that's actually, he's describing perfectly the symptom of apathy. And apathy is a symptom of depression. And that may be, you know, just what he's dealing with. Mm-hmm. You know, we wouldn't talk about this on the air if he hadn't talked about it himself on the air.
Right.
So, you know, we're not talking out of school, but I mean, we love Fezzy. Wish it would have worked out.
Dearly.
You know, we were really, Pete almost bought an apartment in, across the street from XM Studios. And I was looking forward to borrowing that when we go up to do the show, but, that didn't work out. So, oh, well. Anyway, but we do, we love Fezzy and we love everybody at XM 202. So there you go.
Yep.
All right. What else we got? Well, let's do some emails. Now, if you have a question for us, email us at drsteve202@gmail.com or go to ronfez.net and go to the Weird Medicine Forum, and there's a thread there that says post your questions for Dr. Steve here. And what we do is go through there two, three times a week and try to clear out all the questions. And we're going to be featuring questions that were picked up from that forum tonight.
All right. Sounds great.
All right, man. Why don't you read the first one?
All right. Dear Dr. Steve, I would like to insert an RFID tag in my hand, much like a vet would tag the family dog. The question or questions I have are, what would be the best way to clean slash sterilize the clip or the chip before I insert the chip in my hand, and would I be out of line asking my family doctor to insert the chip for me?
Okay. Okay, well, what this guy is talking about is a radio frequency identification tag. Now, we all may be aware that they use this in dogs to identify lost dogs. And you also use a form of this when you check out from Walmart with a DVD. And if you try to, you know, slip it under your coat, the alarm goes off, mm-hmm. and then you just walk out a little faster. But when the way these things work is it's a passive technology in that the chip itself is inserted into either a piece of clothing or a book or a CD or under the skin, and then the scanner activates the chip. So the chip lies dormant until the scanner activates it, and then it sends back its signal. And what this guy wants to do is assign a unique number to himself, and then he can use it as what we call a public key for encryption use. So you can use it to pay your MasterCard or you know, pay a bill in line at the grocery store. You can also use it just to identify yourself in the case of a disaster, you know, where you're unrecognizable.
Now, I would assume that this technology is not caught up. Like, you can't just walk up to a scanner at the supermarket if you actually had one of these under you and just, bloop, scan your arm.
No. But it's coming. And the thing is that you can do is there are credit cards that have RFID chips in them now.
Right.
That you can just pass it in front of the scanner instead of swiping it.
Now, is that like a speed pass at mobile or
kinda.
Something
speed
like
pass.
That?
Yep. Speed pass? Well, for skiing, they have the speed lanes that you can go through and open up for you.
Really? Okay. Well, I guess it's a similar thing. And I've never quite figured out the credit card one because it's really not that hard to just swipe your credit card through the scanner. But this one, you can just wave in front of it. So it takes out that extra little erg of energy that you'd be using. You know, otherwise, I don't get the point. And the problem with the credit cards having the RFID chip in it is if I'm standing next to you and you have one of those and I am a reasonably tech savvy geek, I can have,
which you are,
which I am, I could have a scanner in my bag that would pick up all these RFID chip signals and just store them. And then I could use them, you know, if I was really smart, I could program an RFID chip myself and use it at the grocery store or at the stereo store or wherever, at the jewelry store to buy stuff for myself using your credit card. So I have some concerns about privacy with these things, but, you know, he wants to use it. I talked to him, after he emailed me, and he wants to use it to unlock his house and activate his car. You know, if you have one of these, it's just like your keyless door entry. You can walk up to your car and the door will unlock and the car will start up and all this stuff. I mean, there's all kinds of neat things that you can do.
Now, how would you know to unlock it versus locking it?
Well, if it was locked and you walked up to it, then it would unlock. I mean,
if you walk away from it so many feet or whatever, it
would. I don't know. I mean, it's all just software.
Okay.
But yeah, it makes sense that it could sense whether you were in proximity, and if you weren't, it'd lock itself.
Huh.
But it's all just how you program it. So, you know, there's no feedback, though, to know that you've been scanned. And the other problem is that, you know, the government, if you're a conspiracy type person, could track you pretty easy if you have one of these things. Just put a few scanners up and they can tell exactly where you've gone and where you're going and, you know, where you've been. So,
now, wouldn't the body reject something like that under the skin?
Actually, no. And, the body, you're an orthopedist.
Do they make it out of pencil
lead? Pencil lead.
Because everybody has been stabbed with a pencil lead has a blue mark.
I have one in my hand right here.
I'm showing
it to them. Yeah. It's a visual thing. But yeah, there are lots of substances that are inert to the body. They have all kinds of implants that they use. There's the contraceptive implants are body friendly. You work in orthopedics. And you all implant artificial stuff in people all the time, you know?
They're supposed to be there because you can't get to heaven without something made of metal in your body.
Is that an orthopedic joke?
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Thanks. Failed attempt at humor.
That's okay. I'm sure it's funny on some level.
Yeah.
But these things are just, you know, they're inert to the body. And this guy wants to homebrew his, though. He wants to go buy a chip and somehow sterilize it and then shove it into his hand himself.
This guy needs a psychiatrist, I think.
Well, I don't think he's crazy. I just think that he's, I don't know, just overambitious. But this can be done. These things can be sterilized. They come in a little sterile pack when you have the ones for dogs and stuff. So all you have to do is sterilize the chip, sterilize the skin, a very minor incision done by any surgeon or really family practitioner. Have you ever done any of this kind of stuff, Dr. K?
No, I've never done it.
Okay. But it could be done. I mean, you could imagine doing it. It really doesn't sound like a hard procedure at all. But I would. He asked if he would be out of line asking his family doctor to insert the chip, and the answer is no. His family doc would probably be happy to do it. It'd give him something to talk about. I mean, I would have done it.
Really?
Yeah, you know, really.
Wouldn't something like that have to be FDA approved?
Well,
it is approved, I believe.
Oh, really?
From what I'd read.
They're either
little
FDA,
I've read about it.
They're either FDA approved or they're getting ready to be FDA approved for human use. Now, they're already approved for use in animals. But, you know, really, if you think about it, just any body piercer could do this. You know, if you had an underground RFID human identification society, you know, a body piercer would be the perfect place to start because they do all these kinds of things anyway. And I think the chip is so small that there's a little inserter that you can buy and they use it in dogs. It just looks like a syringe and they stick it under their skin, pop the syringe and it's there. So anyway, so I don't know if we answered this. Well, we did answer his question. Yes, it can be done. No, I wouldn't do it myself. And, you know, if this thing gets infected, number one, it'll ruin the chip and then it'll ruin the part of the body that, you know, it was attached to.
Now, the other option would be possibly to carry like a little metal object that would have a little groove cut in it. You could put that inside the car and turn it and then that would unlock it.
I like it.
Yeah. That's another option.
You're one of them geniusers. All right. Let's go to the next question. This is one that's of interest to a couple of people at XM202, actually.
Hmm.
It's, Dear Dr. Steve, what do you think about lap band? I weigh 350 pounds and I'm 5'6" and have tried everything to lose weight.
Except not eating.
Well, now don't make fun of the guy. I'm sure he tried not eating. I mean, everyone who's tried to lose weight has tried quote-unquote dieting. And we've talked about this several times, that we're big fans of lifestyle changes.
Right.
And but it doesn't, you know, not everybody can lose weight
when you're lifestyle. When you're 400 pounds, some lifestyle changes will bring you down to about 300, and that may be as far as it'll go.
You know, you've got a good point, too, because if you weigh 1,000 pounds and you lose 300, hey, you know, hey, you look great, you only weigh 700 pounds. I mean, it's really, you got a long way to go. So I think it is tough, and it's really discouraging for people who weigh a lot, and they really have, they feel like they've tried everything. We talked about this on one show previously, right. And I think it was our terrestrial show. This study called doubly labeled water and Special K. I don't know if you're familiar with this or not.
No, I've never heard about it, Steve.
What special doubly labeled water is a substance that they can use to determine exactly how many calories you've eaten in the last 24 hours, right? So what you do is you have this is a classic study where they had people who were overweight, massively overweight, write down exactly how much they ate in a day. And then they would have them pee in a bottle, and using the doubly labeled water, they could determine how many calories they actually ate. And when they would add these two things up, they didn't add up. Hmm. The people would, in their diaries, would say that they only ate 1,200 calories. But if you did the doubly labeled water, it showed that they were eating 12,000 calories in a day.
Gosh.
And so what they said was that these people were not lying, but rather they were unable to accurately estimate how much they were eating, and that contributed to their being overweight. So if that's really the problem with some really massively overweight people, and there's no diet in the world that's going to fix them because they're not able to judge how much they're supposed to take in. So, you know, my surgery professors in medical school made fun of the whole weight loss surgery thing. They'd say, you know, people are fat because they eat too much. And, you know, they'd say things like you can't fix a social problem with surgery. But the field has really advanced a lot since the early days. And, you know, the field of quote unquote bariatric surgery has gotten a lot more accepted. You know, there's a lot of people out there getting surgery. I mean, you know, if everything fails, and I mean everything, then I think some patients are candidate for some sort of surgical intervention. And it should only be done on adults who are at least 100 pounds overweight or have a body mass index of 40 or greater. And you can go online and calculate your body mass index. Just mm-hmm. go to Google and search body mass index calculator. There are two major surgical procedures done these days for being overweight, and one's a gastric bypass, and that's what Steve C. from Opie and Anthony had, mm-hmm. and he's talked about it several times on the air. And then there's the gastric laparoscopic gastric banding surgery. Now, the bypass does just that. It bypasses the majority of the stomach and dumps food directly from this little pouch that they make into the small intestine. And when they and if you go to ronfez.net, I posted a picture there of what this looks like. And it's called a Roux-en Y, it makes a little Y where the old stomach and the new stomach meet. And it makes this little Y shape, new anatomy. And this is a pretty major surgical procedure, and you're changing the human anatomy permanently, mm-hmm. you know. Now, the laparoscopic gastric banding surgery is done with a laparoscope, which means that there's just a tiny incision. They use a little scope, and they put an inflatable loop around the stomach to make a little pouch. And basically, it's less invasive. It's reversible. They can take it out. It's also adjustable. So if the pouch is too tight or too small, they can adjust it. And they get decent results, but it's a lot less dramatic. Now, do you have any patients that have had either one of these?
Yeah, sure. I saw a patient the other week who had aspiration or, you know, regurgitation of the stomach fluid into the esophagus and into his throat. And we weren't sure what was going on. And then a couple of days after he was admitted, he admitted to us that he had had a gastric banding.
Oh, okay.
And so that's why he had regurgitated and gotten pneumonia from it. So kind of interesting. And the doctor, the surgeon, came by and loosened it up with a magnet, I believe. He deflated some air from a pump and then loosened it up, and he felt a lot better afterwards. So it was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
It's the first time I'd seen one in a medical situation. But
yeah, cool. Yeah, I've had several patients with it. People lose an average of 1 to 2 pounds a week, but it's not a magical solution. You can definitely defeat it. All of these things can be defeated. Mm-hmm. You can find things that you can eat that'll up your calorie count, like milkshakes, Ensure and other like high carb, low residue foods, and because they just slip through the pouch and go into the main stomach. Any program that offers you a surgical solution to being overweight had better have a really comprehensive and long lasting dietary counseling program, or they just won't get the results that you need. You still need the lifestyle change that John and I have talked about multiple times.
Yeah, and I want to say that before you do these, I think you have to go through the processes of making an attempt to lose weight the old-fashioned way on your own. And then if that fails, then you actually can qualify for most of that.
Well, absolutely. And that's why I said at the beginning, if everything else fails,
right.
I mean, you really have to try the
lifestyle modification. Yeah. Diet and exercise. Wow, again.
Yep.
Diet and exercise.
Yeah, eat less and burn more calories. But again, if the doubly labeled water study is accurate for even a percentage of overweight people, you know, even a small percentage, that's a large, if you multiply that times 300 million people in the United States, that's a huge percentage or a huge number of people that will not be able to lose weight any other way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm not advocating surgical solution. I really think it needs to be a last resort, but it is an option out there for some people, and some people have had good results. Now, I've had a few people who have had the gastric bypass
mm-hmm.
who have ended up with weird complications mm-hmm. down the road, like pancreatitis and things like that, mm-hmm. that we never could quite pin on the gastric bypass, but they were young people who were having some really serious problems. And I always wondered about it. I actually looked on PubMed, which is a repository of medical literature, and couldn't find anything conclusive there. But I've seen more than one or two.
I've seen a lot of patients with anemia, malnutrition, problems from fibrosis of the area of the surgery,
scarring. He means.
Yeah, and scarring of the area and. It does have long-term complications, so you'd wish these people would really give it a good shot before they
yeah.
went for the surgical
Yeah, I think
cure.
Most people are – it certainly is more energy efficient to look for a simple solution to this. It's really is hard work
mm-hmm.
to lose a lot of weight, although there are lots of people out there that have done it with just diet and exercise, and God bless them. And I do think that you're right that all those things need to be tried. And you certainly don't want to jump just for surgery. You've got to really give the other stuff a mm-hmm. real try, because you may be surprised that you may be able to lose weight
a lot.
On your own. But anyway, if you have a complication with the laparoscopic gastric banding surgery, at least you can remove it and your anatomy goes back to normal. All right. So let's go to the next question. John, you want to read this one?
Sure. Hey, Dr. Steve, I sometimes use meat tenderizer once in a while in a pinch when I cook. I've heard conflicting statements on whether or not meat tenderizer is bad for you. Some say it's a protein that is denatured when the steak is cooked and is harmless, while others say it breaks up the connective tissue in your digestive system the same as it does to the meat you apply to it.
Oh my
Can
God.
You shed some light on this?
You and your meat.
Meat.
That's a whole nother story. Okay, so what this person is asking is, does meat tenderizer tenderize your innards? Right?
Well,
okay,
right.
He's wondering if, since it digests meat, when you eat it, since you're made of meat, will it digest you too?
Oh my gosh.
I love this question because it's weird and it's medicine, hence the name.
Uh-huh.
I use a mallet as a meat tenderizer, and as an amateur chef, it's the only thing I use if I'm dealing with a tough piece of meat. And obviously, you wouldn't want to use that on your digestive system. But seriously, folks, you see, and I just read that straight off of the forum. That didn't work.
Yeah.
So anyway,
no.
The tenderizers you're talking about are two things usually that you can buy over the counter called pepane and then bromelain. And they're enzymes that are found in the papaya and pineapple plants.
Did you just admit to beating your meat?
I plead. I take the fifth.
I just caught on to that. Sorry, it took me a while, but I got there.
I take the fifth. But anyway. These things are digestive enzymes, and they break up connective fibers in muscle tissue. Okay, and here's the thing. Even if they weren't broken down in the stomach, which they most likely are because they're proteins, the digestive system can take it. I mean, it's your digestive system is designed to withstand its own digestive juices, and by God, it can withstand the digestive juices in papaya
juice
and pineapple. Right, exactly. Because, I mean, you eat pineapple and papaya without any problems.
Right.
And this, you know, these things are natural products. Your stomach can handle it. Now, the exception, of course, is if you have a stomach ulcer, you know, and that's where acid is able to get through the defense of the stomach, which is basically just slime and mucus. And once it can get through that, it can eat away at the stomach wall, and that's a whole other subject.
Yeah, but you're not going to tenderize your stomach by using meat.
Meat tenderizer.
Nope, you can use all the meat tenderizer that you want to.
The hydrochloric acid in your stomach's probably doing a better job at tenderizing the meat than
absolutely.
The meat tenderizer.
Well, that's what it's there for.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
pretty interesting question, though. This takes some imagination there.
I know. Well, I think it's a great question because there are those folk myths out there that,
right.
Oh, God, don't use that stuff because it'll eat up your insides. You know, if it's eating a meat on the plate, why wouldn't it eat up your innards? You know? So there you go. I like it. Here's a question by Angry Missy that was posted to ronfez.net. It says, yesterday for the second time, I got food stuck in my nasal passage. I was eating a fresh mozzarella and roasted red pepper omelet and laughed while I was chewing and got cheese and egg in my nasal passage. Mm. Swallowing wouldn't get it out. Blowing my nose hard made it move around but not dislodge, and I suffered with it all day, and this morning it was gone. So how do you get it out if that happens? Are there any long-term consequences to egg and cheese in your sinuses? Well,
she must have got a visit from the egg and cheese nasal fairy.
Is that what it was? Oh, to get it out?
Yeah, because she woke up and it was gone.
Now, see, that's funny, John. No, it is. It's funny. Anyway, sorry. The problem is that the entryway to the nose through the backside in the pharynx or the posterior part of the throat is pretty big. But the nose itself is small passage-wise, so it's like a funnel. And it's easy to cram eggs and cheese and roasted peppers into the big part and the back, but it's not so easy to keep it going in the same direction by blowing it to make it come out the front. So the best way to get crap out of the nose that's come in through the pharynx is to push it back out into the pharynx itself the way it came in. But the best way to do that is with a saline irrigator. Now, what this is a little thing that looks like a teapot, and you put a nasal saline solution, which you can buy, or you can make it yourself. And there's a formula for it on 20 different websites on the internet. And you put your head forward, tip it a little bit to the side, stick it in one nostril, the offending nostril, and you just pour the stuff in until it comes out the other nose. Now, this is a technique that takes a little practice to keep it from going down your throat, and you really want it to come out the other nostril if you can.
Yeah, I would think that you could possibly suck it back into your lungs, couldn't you?
Well, you don't want to breathe while you're doing this. What you want to do is breathe through your mouth if you're going to breathe at all. And the people that really can pull this off can turn their head to the side, pour this stuff in one nostril, breathe through their mouth the whole time, and it comes out the other nostril. And any kind of big chunks of foreign material end up, you know, in your mouth. And then you're done. And this thing is called a neti pot. It's N-E-T-I pot. And there's also this stuff called Simply Saline that's an aerosol nasal irrigator that can help too. And, you know, just don't try to push it back in with a pencil or anything if you got eggs and cheese forced into the actual sinus. You know, God help you. Because that's a nightmare. And there's just no way to get it out other than surgery. So ultimately, prevention is the key. Just stop laughing when you eat, for God's sake.
I don't know. Did she maybe try, like, you know how you can hack a loogie? Do you think she tried that?
Yeah, I don't know. She didn't say. The problem is
she'd have to suck it back in her nose.
Yeah,
and then hack. I would think that's
hack the
muscle. That sounds like that would have worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But exactly. The medical terminology for that is called snarfing.
Is that Is that right?
Yeah, the old snarf.
Yes, yeah, snarf from Battle Cat, right?
Yeah. When you cough and you cough milk or orange juice out of your nose. In primary school, they used to call it a snarf. I don't know.
I think
it's, you guys know. Oh, you're making it up.
No, it was really called snarfing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It sounds like a perfectly legitimate medical term to me.
Oh, man, I snarf milk.
Oh, that's funny because there's a Thundercats. They had snarf on there. There was a cat, the little thing called snarf, and he would go, snarf, snarf.
Oh, my God. Well, that gives me a great image now of the Thundercats.
Yeah, Thundercats. Snarf, snarf.
All right. Well, we've got a serious question here. This is about premature ejaculation, and I think this is one that a lot of people would be interested in. It says, Dear Dr. Steve, it seems that I'm suffering from premature ejaculation. When I masturbate, it takes the normal time to ejaculate, but when I'm with my girlfriend, I don't know how to prolong it. Where do I go from here? And it's signed, Not Eastside Dave. So, all right, Not Eastside Dave. There are several tricks of the trade. And one is masturbating an hour or two before intercourse. And that, you know, it just prolongs the time to your next ejaculation. And you can also avoid intercourse for a period of time and just focus on other things. You know, since he's able to masturbate normally but has trouble when he's with his girlfriend, then there's a real likelihood that this is a psychological problem. You know, he's feeling some pressure. So one of the things that he can do is just pleasure his girlfriend in any way other than through intercourse. And that could be with, you know, a device or, you know, with his tongue or whatever. You know, figure it out. And then after she's sort of gotten hers, then he can worry about his and the pressure will be off because she's going to be completely, you know,
satisfied.
That's right.
Time to get mine.
That's right. Yeah. So that would be another trick to just take the pressure off. And then once he realizes that she's pretty satisfied with what's going on, then he might be able to, have normal intercourse with her. Now, there are those people that have a really serious problem with this. And there is this classic technique called the squeeze technique. Are you familiar with that at all? You guys?
Yeah, I've heard about it before.
Yeah,
but I didn't know it was an actual technique.
Yeah, it really is.
It was named.
Yeah, it's a lot of the sex therapists will use this. And basically what you do is you've got to have a willing partner and one that knows what the issue is and is willing to help you with it. And basically what you do is you begin sexual activity. And then when you start feeling ready to ejaculate, you have your partner squeeze the end of the penis and put their thumb right over the meatus or the opening of the penis and have them maintain the squeeze until the urge to ejaculate passes. Now, if you go ahead and splooge anyway, all right, so you try again next time. Don't worry about it. You know, and there are other things that you can do to satisfy your girlfriend.
So you're literally choking the chicken.
Exactly. Well, you're figuratively choking the chicken. It's not literal, but anyway. Then after the squeeze is released, assuming that you don't explode, you wait about 30 seconds and then go back to foreplay or whatever it was you were doing. And you may notice initially that squeezing it, you know, causes you to lose your erection to a certain degree. But when you start up again, it should come right back. And if you again feel you're about to ejaculate, have your partner repeat the squeeze technique again. And you just keep doing this and doing this. And you can reach the point of entry without ejaculating, you know. And then after a few practice sessions, you get your confidence up. You can learn how to control the...
How to really get your swerve on then.
Exactly. Now, there are, if let's say that doesn't work, or it's just you don't have a ready and willing partner, or you're a porn star, and that, you know, is not conducive to excellent, you know, video, doing the squeeze technique. There are certain antidepressants that are out there, and there are also topical anesthetics that are used, you know, things, numbing gels. None of them are specifically approved by the FDA, and it really doesn't matter. Your healthcare provider can write them anyway. We've talked about this before as well. that just because something isn't approved by the FDA for a specific reason doesn't mean doctors can't use it. I mean, Special K, you write stuff that's quote-unquote off-label all the time.
All the time, but, you know, you've got to discuss that with the patient, and as long as everyone understands, I think that's the way
to go. Yeah, and, well, and the thing is it's perfectly legal to do that. The thing about it is that I don't think any of the large pharmaceutical companies are that interested in pursuing an indication for premature ejaculation for their antidepressant drug. It costs millions and millions of dollars to get a new indication for a drug. And once they've got it on the market, their interest in getting it approved for other things starts going down exponentially, you know? So but you only need an indication, you know, it only needs to be approved for one indication to hit the market, and then doctors can write it for whatever they want. A great example is this drug Neurontin. You know, we use it for what we call neuropathic pain, which is pain from damaged nerves. And for the longest time, we wrote it without an indication because it was an anti-seizure drug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can think of dozens of examples where we do that. And so it's perfectly okay for your doctor to write these things after you've discussed the risks and the benefits and alternatives and all that stuff. So, you know, a side effect of certain antidepressants is delayed orgasm. And people complain about that when they're on Prozac, you know, they just can't get to the point where they can ejaculate, or it just takes forever. And for people with premature ejaculation, though, that sounds pretty good. And for them, it really brings them more to a normal period of ejaculation. Go ahead.
Would you be using something like Prozac as on a regular basis, or would you be using it, say, oh, I think I'm going to get laid tonight, and
I'm taking the Prozac tonight.
Yeah, now that won't. I don't think that'll work.
Yeah, so you would have to have it on a regular basis.
Prozac has what we call a really long half-life. In other words, it stays in your body forever, and because of that, it has a real long time to peak effect as well. So you can't just take one tonight and say, oh, you know, I'm going to get it on.
Right.
So that, yeah, that
Dr. Steve, I think another problem is you take these antidepressant medications for delayed or for premature ejaculation, and it's going to drop your libido also, you know, some of the side effects. You may not want to have sex anymore, period.
Yeah, so. That's a great point. One of the major side effects of a lot of the antidepressants is decreased libido or decreased sex drive. And it really would be a shame if all of a sudden you lost your problem with premature ejaculation and now you didn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that. I think that's a problem. There are certain of the antidepressants that have less of an effect as far as libido is concerned. Effexor is one of them. This new one called Pristiq is another one. Those would be the two major ones that I can think of offhand. But the other ones that are used for this are Paxil and Zoloft. But again, those have that side effect of losing your libido. Now, it just increases your risk of losing your libido. It doesn't mean that you're doomed.
Sure.
Not everybody that takes them loses their libido.
One of the things I'd want to know is, especially for the person that sent in the email, which is not Eastside Dave, I'd want to know, how long have you been with this person?
Yep.
Because if you've been with them and you're just now beginning to have sex with them, then, well, hello. You know, I would be, as soon as you get it in.
Or if it's the first time he's ever had sex in life.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever had sex before with somebody else? And it's always been a problem. I mean, if this person that you're with and they're new, or is this somebody that you've been with for 3 years?
Yeah.
And for the last 3 years, every time you stick it in her, bam, you just pop in a wad.
I think what you're saying is that context matters.
Right.
With sexual activity. It really does. You know, so, you're right. The first time that you do it with someone is different than the 100th time that you do it with them. And it may be that.
But it's all magical for me.
I understand that. And I think, I had a good joke and I just decided not to throw it out there.
Okay.
Because I didn't want. Your wife's pregnant. I just didn't want her to kill me.
Yeah, that's good.
One of the things that I think you raise a really good point about is this whole business with context. And it may just be that he's had some performance anxiety. You know, it only takes one time of having a problem to then start having it wear on your mind. And the next time you have sex, and you have a problem because now you're anxious about it.
Right.
And now you've got an ongoing problem. It becomes a vicious cycle that the more problems you have, the more anxious you get. The more anxious you get, the more problems that you're going to have. And so I think when you have that kind of psychological premature ejaculation, again, taking the pressure off, trying some other activities other than, you know, penile vaginal intercourse in the beginning, at least in that session, in that particular session, or again, masturbating an hour or two beforehand to give yourself some confidence would help. Now, there are these topical anesthetic creams. Let's talk about those a little bit. You can buy these in any sex shop, and they usually contain a medication called lidocaine or prilocaine. And both of these are topical anesthetics, and they'll just numb the penis, right? And what you do is you put them on, assuming that you're not allergic to them, because these can cause some really serious allergic reactions. But then you wipe off the stuff and then enjoy. And the downside is, once again, there's always a downside, decreased sexual enjoyment, because now your schlong is numb.
And you probably know, hers is, you know, her vagina is probably numb as well if you use too much of it.
Exactly right. A lot of women complain about that now their enjoyment is gone because they've got a numb vagina.
Or mouth.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. And this stuff.
Or fart box.
Is really good on the mucous membranes. And if you have oral sex after putting one of these on, you'll have a sensation of your mouth swelling up and you'll be numb. And, you know, so anyway, I lost it. I've lost John and Kartha. I hope the compressor caught that. You're screaming into the microphone. John cracked himself up.
That's just the funniest term I've ever heard.
I know. Opie doesn't get enough credit.
Oh, my God. That was the funniest thing the other day when I heard that fart box. My God.
That was awesome.
Oh, my God. So that was hilarious.
So the last thing I want to talk about with premature ejaculation is psychotherapy. You know, this is the kind of thing where you're lying on the couch, tell me about your mother kind of stuff. And if everything else fails, consider therapy. But try to find somebody. If you live in the city especially, you're going to have a certified sex therapist nearby. And, you know, just talk to someone. There is help out there.
Now, Steve, I've heard friends of mine have told me that Viagra and such drugs can make you go longer. Do you think there's any truth to that? Or
I think they're definitely confidence builders. Whether they extend, you know, the time to ejaculation, I'm not really sure. To be honest with you, we'll look that up and maybe we can bring that up next time. Because, you know, it's a great question. But definitely, if it's a problem of confidence, I think some people that lose their erection may start ejaculating prematurely just to get it out there, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you've got Viagra and that's one of your problems, then I think you'll go longer because you're not worried about losing that erection. So
cool.
As always, talk to your doctor before taking any medications. Don't listen to us. We're just a goofy radio show that talks about fart boxes and stuff. So, all right. Let's shift gears a little bit. This is from Biggest Mexi. You want to read this one, John?
Sure. What is the best way to clean your ears out? I heard that you shouldn't put anything in your ear bigger than your elbow from a company physical physician. AKA Q-tip. How well do these candles work? What about the air thing that blows it out backwards? Or can you just take a warm shower and tilt your head under that? Will this cause swimmer's ear? Mm. I had that before and wowza.
All right. Okay. This is the first thing. Regarding the shower, don't do that. I speak from experience. The stream from the shower is way too powerful. What people will do is they'll get in the shower, turn their head, and aim their ear at the stream coming from the shower head. Now, I fractured dislocated one of the bones in my middle ear doing that.
Oh, gosh.
And I just had this. Yes, you can do it. What are you asking him?
Because I think I talked to you before about this, and I just that just sounds very odd.
You have poor hearing in that ear now?
I did for the longest time. Hmm. I just had a rattling in my ears. And if you know the anatomy of the middle ear, you've got tympanic membrane or eardrum, and then you've got three little bones, the hammer, anvil, and stirrup, that transmit sound from the eardrum to the inner ear. And when I did this, I heard this loud noise and had this terrible pain. And then for the next 6 weeks, I just had this rattling in my ear every time I heard a noise. Hmm. And it just felt like the stupid stirrup was just dangling down there and shaking around in my middle ear. Eventually, it got better. So, you know, I may be being a little overdramatic saying that I dislocated it, but something really bad happened in mm-hmm. there. So don't do that. Now, you know, assuming you don't have any holes in your eardrums or any other problems, you can really safely clean out your ears using the technique of lavage, which just means using water.
Squirt.
Yeah, squirting. Buy a thing called a murine ear kit, and you can buy one at any pharmacy, and you get a little rubber bulb syringe and a little bottle of this glycerin stuff that's got peroxide in it. And if you've got a clogged ear, and we used to do these in our office all the time. We had these big, giant chrome syringes, and we looked really fancy doing it. And basically, we were just squirting water in people's ear, and then you charge them $35. I mean, you know, you can save, if you're going four times a year, you can save yourself a couple $100 by doing this. You just, you know, you lie down with the clogged ear pointing up to the ceiling, and you put in about 5 to 10 drops of the solution into your ear canal, and you'll hear it, you know, foaming and bubbling and all that stuff. And just lay down and watch TV for 15 minutes. And then after it's softened up, you just fill a sink with lukewarm water. It really should be body temperature, because if it's too hot, you'll burn the inside of your ear. And if it's too cold, you'll actually induce vertigo. And the neurologists will do that, where they'll instill ice cold water in somebody's ear and watch them get dizzy. And I think they just do it for the perverseness of it, rather than it actually telling them anything. But anyway, so you fill up the bulb syringe and point your ear down to the water, and then just squirt. And you'll get these big globs of stuff out, and it's really satisfying. And then repeat on the other ear. Now, people have asked me before about ear candles. Karthik, do you know about these things at all?
Yeah, I do. It's my wife likes to use them from time to time.
Does she?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to debunk that, because here's the thing. I want everybody who's ever heard of using an ear candle before or has been told to use one to try this trick. Because what these are candles wrapped in paper. And the thing is that you light the candle, it's supposed to cause a vacuum. And then it's supposed to pull the wax out. And people go, look, see, there's wax at the end of the ear candle when you pull it out. Well, they've done study after study with these things. Number one, they don't make a vacuum. And number two, when you look in the person's ear, the stuff is still in there. And what happens is that if you take the ear candle, this is the test I want everybody to do that doesn't believe me. Take the candle, put it in a glass, wrap it in like a paper towel to simulate the inside of an ear, and then light the candle and walk away. Then when you blow it out, what you'll see on the end is all kinds of what looks like earwax on the end of the candle, and it hadn't been anywhere near an ear, you know? So they are complete and utter baloney, and they really don't work. And I can prove that to your wife the next time she gets a clogged up ear, but she's so meticulous, I doubt that she actually has wax in her ear.
She's, you know, got the Q-tips going every morning. So.
All right. Well, listen, I cannot believe that this hour is already over. I feel like I just droned on and on and on. I probably did. So I really appreciate you guys being here, John and Special K. Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
You enjoyed it too.
It was great.
This hour has flown by like stool from a colonoscopy prep's ass. I want to thank you guys for being here, and for our listeners for supporting us. Even though the live show is up in the air for October, I'd really like to do a pre-election show outlining the candidates' proposals for health care in this country and stuff. If you have something to say on this, email us at drsteve202@gmail.com. We may use your comments on the show, or we may even want to do an interview with you for broadcast. I know we have one fan from Canada who has some pretty strong views about our country's health care system, but it's supposed to be weird medicine. So don't forget to write about your ass, nut, and dick problems, too. Okay?
Yeah, so, always appreciate it.
Or post them to ronfez.net. We're answering them, can do some good for other people as well. You know, we're monthly now, so I'm going to dispense with my usual sycophantic thank yous to the powers that be at XM 202. But we're having huge fun doing this, and it's all due to the boys and one girl at 202. And we appreciate you all more than you'll ever know. You know, for P.A. John, North Philly Pete, who couldn't be here, and Special K, thanks for listening. Email us again at drsteve202@gmail.com. I'm Dr. Steve. Check your nuts every month and quit smoking. Stay healthy, and we'll see you next month for more Weird Medicine.
Comfortably numb.